the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson, pleased to be with you here at the first official or full week of August. Want to let you know fresh out of the gate that this week's show is sponsored by David C. Cook, the publisher, because they bought a sponsorship for my book, The Dating Manifesto. Wasn't that kind of them? So this is awkwardly kind of a Lisa Anderson show. I'm just going to put that out there because The Dating Manifesto is now available at all retailers, including online. And you can actually get a free chapter. If you think, like, I don't even know if Lisa has anything legit to say and I don't want to invest the money right off the bat, I'm okay with that, whatever. So go to boundless.org/subscribe, sign up for our e-newsletter, and you'll get a free chapter of the book. I am also, this week, was on the Focus on the Family daily broadcast, and you know we love it when we can help promote and support our daily broadcast with Jim Daly. So check that out. You will hear my voice on there talking about whatever, singleness and preparing for marriage and the book in particular. So great times there. Well, later on in this show, we have our counselor, Glenn Lutyens, here to answer the question, how can we refrain from sexual activity until marriage? And I love how this question is framed, like, is it even possible? So we're hopefully going to offer some great encouragement on that front. Then for the culture segment, our own fantastic Joshua Rogers, contributor and blogger, is the one who interviewed me for our culture on my book, The Dating Manifesto, because I thought that interviewing myself would be super just weird. And so he stepped in. And so fun times there. You'll hear that coming up. But here we are for our round table. And I'm very excited to have Jen, Brandon, and Rajiv in the studio. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Great to have you. And I guess I think Martha picked this topic in light of the culture segment and some things that I address in the book, because we're going to talk about what it means to wise up, own your issues, and kind of chart a course for your relationship future. And I think for some of us, this involves like maybe some backtracking. For some of us, it involves some reframing. For some of us, it maybe involved a wake-up call or some mentors just telling us, you know, I'm not speaking personally here, of course. Maybe you need to do X, Y, Z before anyone will marry you. I'm just being honest. So I think this is going to be fun to dive into this conversation. And I do want to start out by asking you all, as we kind of think back, when you started dating or were of a dateable age, what frame of mind were you in? And did you really, looking back on that now, were you in a position to be dating and getting married? Or, you know, where would you say you kind of started from ground zero?
For me, I think it was in my probably mid-20s.
Okay.
I think I was 23, 24. I was actively involved in youth ministry at my church. I was working with a couple mentors who were kind of helping inform and shape that process for me. And so I feel like I was in a good position because 2 years later, or two, three, four, whatever timeline you want to look at, years later, I was introduced to my now wife. Hmm. And so I felt I was in a very good position. Obviously, I had made lots of mistakes and dated poorly and all that through college. And really, it was an opportunity for me, for God to prepare me to meet my wife.
Okay. So just following up on that, Rajiv, you said you dated poorly in college. Give an example of something that you did poorly.
I think, as many Christian singles try to dip their toe in the cultural waters, mm-hmm. I definitely didn't use the discretion I should have in making sure that I was guarding my own heart and also those the hearts of those who I was flirting with, and really putting myself in a position to compromise. And I, you know, regret a lot of those decisions. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, you know, God restored all of those things. And my wife and I have been able to, you know, work through any issues that come up because mm-hmm. of those as consequences. You reap what you sow. So definitely for me, it was lack of commitment and really just not treating women with the respect that they deserve mm-hmm. as daughters of God and my sisters in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm similar to Rajiv in that it was probably my mid-20s that I kind of got to the point, really, really, when my relationship with Christ kind of became more serious again. So it was 2003, 10 probably, but in college, you know, really just made some poor choices, knew, okay, I'm in a new spot with a ton of girls. I'm just going to try to kind of date as many different ones as I can. But then really having kind of more of the physical be the bedrock of what I was basing it off of, instead of getting to know them as that person. And at that time, my relationship with God wasn't good either as well. So it was more of that, what does society say that you should look for? But it was when I kind of got back on track again that I really felt like I was in that position to start intentionally dating and looking for a spouse, because I knew, okay, these are those core things that I need to have. Mm-hmm. So,
I really didn't start dating until college. And I think that, you know, the two reasons why I don't know that that was the best timing for me is, number one is that I knew who I was in Christ in my head, but it hadn't really sunk into my heart yet. And I think until you really, you know, really know who you are in Christ, it affects your relationships, and you're going to respond to different things, conflict, you know, whatever it is that comes up, not in the most godly way. And then the other part of that is I think my expectations were not the most realistic the younger I was. And so I did have a very long list of things that I felt were, you know, non-negotiables. And I think the older I get, the more, you know, character is important and other things. I realized that the guys that were the most, you know, handsome and dashing when I was 18 didn't have the character to back it up, and we couldn't hold a conversation or really get much, you know, very far past that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it reminds me, I think one of my biggest failings was, one, just making assumptions. Having grown up in a pretty idyllic Christian environment, I just figured I would start dating someone and it was going to be easy and we weren't going to have conflict. And not only not have conflict, but I just would not see any dysfunction. And so when I saw dysfunction, I just assumed that I must have been misinterpreting it. And then I found out, oh no, this is really dysfunction. But by then, I had, to Rajiv's point, given up way too much capital of myself. I was planning my future with this person. I was thinking everything was going to be worked out with just enough hard work and stuff. And all of a sudden they were bailing and I was in tears and devastated, and it felt like a divorce, and it was just a big, big drama fest. So, and that actually happened. I realized that was a pattern for me, because that actually happened several times in relationships. So, so good points there. Okay, so looking at that, I mean, did anyone like step into your life to kind of show you at this point? I mean, did you even have, were you reading books? Were you thinking, were you assuming that, you know, the way you were dating was just normal, or was everyone else kind of doing the same thing? Or did you have a kind of a wake up call moment where you realized, okay, maybe something here isn't working? Or were you kind of the frog in the kettle? I mean, describe how that kind of process worked.
My sisters actually have really godly marriages and got married young. I think young marriage runs in my family. And I remember my sister dating someone who was 19 at the time, and I was dating someone older. And I remember noticing how mature he was spiritually, her boyfriend, and going, why am I settling for this? Mm-hmm. Because I feel like this is what, you know, I shouldn't expect too much. Mm-hmm. And here's this kid who has such a strong walk with the Lord. I need to change my expectations. I need to, you know, up the bar as far as what I'm looking for spiritually and character-wise, mm-hmm. and I need to make my expectations more realistic as far as looks and, you know, other mm-hmm. things that really don't matter. So that was my big moment, and I don't remember how old I was. I was probably 24 or something, and so that really changed a lot of things, and mm-hmm. it's like, oh gosh.
Yeah, no, good point.
I grew up in a Christian home. I have amazing parents. They're thankfully still married. Come from a ministry family, and I didn't have one of the families that I just wanted to push away from. I know that happens a lot with, you know, pastor families and kids that have parents that are in ministry and they're wounded in many ways by that. I didn't have that. I had a great home, and I didn't feel a desire to pull away from that. But in retrospect, I did, and maybe it. Obviously, you know, you have this new freedom, and what are you going to do with it? And I think I had my own crisis of faith, and I think for many of us millennials, it comes in the form of exploring relationships and what does all this mean, and my parents weren't right, and my parents are stupid. Hmm. But in actuality, you know, in my case, my parents were right, and I totally disregarded, you know, a lot of their counsel. And it, you know, things are caught and taught, right? So I think a lot when it came to relationships and all that, it was caught from watching my parents, watching the type of people they were around, watching the type of lifestyle they lived. And they taught me some, and I think I had thankfully I had mentors to teach me kind of other components of what that looks like. So for me, it was dipping my toe into what the culture said, or in this case, I went to a Christian school, so what my conditions would allow. Mm-hmm. I think I tried to push the boundaries there, and realizing, you know, later with the help of mentors to kind of redirect me back on to the best path. Mm-hmm. was a process, you know, and it's a hard turn. Mm-hmm. Growing up the way, you know, I think, you know, my parents raised me well, making that shift toward the culture and the flesh and all those and the sexual brokenness that we all deal with. And then making a hard turn back to what are the best steps that I can take or mentors can help me take to lead me to being a very eligible and having a strong character, you know, as a future husband. Mm-hmm. And father.
Mm-hmm. And so I had a great, you know, my parents have been married for many years. So just growing up had a really good example set for me in terms of what a healthy marriage, what marriage does look like. But at the same time, I never really had the advice or anyone kind of speak into how I should do it. I've never read a dating book, which maybe is good or bad. You know, people are kind of land on either side of that.
Well, mine is out now, so you can.
That is true. I could start with the manifesto.
Should have brought a copy but you probably left it out here in the studio. Okay, go ahead.
And so then really, you know, high school, I didn't date at all. It was college where it really kind of unfortunately developed some bad habits of really the whole friends with benefits concept of dating. You know, I had friends that's what they did. Everything was very kind of physically oriented, and so you start just getting into relationships for the sake of what you can get out of it. It's generally based on looks. It's very superficial things, and mm-hmm. then you go for a time, and you're just done. Mm-hmm. Something happens, and then you move on to the next mm-hmm. person, the next, you know, available, and it that became kind of that cyclical pattern of that's what you did every 2 or 3 months. You were just changing out the girl for someone else, and it.
Yeah.
I should never have done that, and it wasn't anything from my childhood that would have ever been said, this is how you date. It just was what I picked up from mm-hmm. really culture, from friends, from, I went to a Christian college, but it was, I had friends that were very far from that too. Mm-hmm. And so then you tend to become a product of the environment that you immerse yourself in.
Yeah, good point. It's interesting because you mentioned the whole cyclical nature of things, and I know we've often heard it described that, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. I think a lot of that can apply to dating in the sense of we kind of have blinders on and think, I mean, I know in my 20s, I thought I was pretty amazing, you know, and so I was like, who wouldn't want to date this, y'all, you know, whatever. And then I had to realize, oh, you know, okay, well, people aren't dating me, so could there be a correlation? Is there something in your life? And, you know, I talked about this at Pursuit as well, and I brought up the whole concept of so many young adults sit around waiting for life to happen to them rather than actively and proactively stepping out and saying, here's what I want out of life. Here's what I want out of my relationship with Christ. Here's what I want out of my relationship with others. How do I get there? What is something in your life, and this is where we're just going to get down and dirty, that you have had to realize, whether through a mentor or through just trial and error or whatever, that you had to wise up in or change about yourself or grow in, mature in, something along those lines?
For me, I think that's easy, and it was spiritual disciplines. So and there's nothing exciting about, you know, the answer here, and it's having disciplines of prayer, Bible reading, Bible study, meditation, you know, those types of disciplines. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it took a mentor pressing me to do that. Here, you need to be reading this, you know, tell me what you think about it. Mm-hmm. Walking through those types of steps. And I think as I get older, and now, you know, I've been married for, you know, 5.5 years now, I didn't take seriously the connection between spiritual character and how that manifests in your relationships. So whether it be platonic friendships or friendships with the opposite gender or in marriage, and how you date, and how you, and even before that, how you are a person preparing to date, and what are you doing to make sure that your character is solid. You can own your blind spots. You're very aware of all the steps you need to take in order for you to get to a point where you're, I think, spiritually eligible, right? We talk about availability. just as an indicator, you know, how are you spiritually eligible? So you can be an eligible bachelor, whatever. What conditions? So for me, what are the conditions in my heart that I needed to work out and put the disciplines in place before I was engaged, married, that would ultimately, hopefully, carry me through and set a foundation? So now me as a husband and a father, what does that mean for me now?
Cool.
I think the challenge I had to overcome was partly my personality, because I am more introverted at heart. And so my whole life I've heard, you need to be more outgoing. You know, they're never going to notice the wallflower. And on one hand, I think you should be authentic to the personality God gave you, because nobody wants to, you know, fall in love with someone you think you should be. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, I can't use that as a crutch to not push myself. And so the moment of truth came when I heard about the Pursuit Conference, and I'd been saying for the longest time, I really want to meet, you know, a conservative Christian guy who has values like mine. And I'm just not finding that the place with all the things I've already tried. And I don't really know what else to try. And then that came up. And I tried to get other single friends come with me. It didn't work out. And so again, I was like, Lord, you know how hard this is for me. I really don't want to go by myself. And in the end, it was just like, you know, are you going to let your introversion hold you back from something great? So, and I'm so glad I went. And I'm glad that even, you know, though I put myself out there, it wasn't like I was in the middle of the room. And later, you know, I met my boyfriend Andrew there, and he told me later that he's always preferred girls who are a little more shy. So had I been trying to not be authentic, I don't know how it would have gone actually. Mm-hmm. But I'm just so thankful. So I'm so thankful for Pursuit and just the people in my life that at the last minute when I found out the, you know, what the ratios were, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not going. You know, it's mostly women. It's going to be like church. And most of these girls in their 20s, and I can't, you know, compete with that. So what's the point of this? And my mom was actually the one who said, I just feel like you're supposed to go, just do it. And I thought, okay, you know, we'll see what God has.
Cool. Wow. Yeah, ratio was good for me, right? It's funny that I'm kind of in the middle of both, literally sitting in the middle of both Rajiv and Jen, but kind of the same concepts to say, you know, spiritual maturity was huge. Mm-hmm. For me, in that at the time, even before 2010, there'd have been no way that I'd been ready to get married. I just, my heart was not in the right place. I was looking for all the wrong things in terms of what I wanted from a relationship. Just very unhealthy, would not have ended well at all. And so once I had a chance to kind of refocus my relationship with Christ, it really, that centered me. And I look at even things in my life now that situations, even a couple of years ago, that I would have responded to very differently, that I now have the ability to kind of fight off, you know, not be tempted by things that I would have just given into. But the other one is the introverted side too. It's, you know, it's rejection. If there was anything that I could have done differently, it would have been, don't be scared to be rejected. That probably, I mean, I could have been married, but who knows? I don't know what, you know, God has a special plan, but that was a huge thing. I never wanted to be rejected. So I never took the chances. Okay. I never took the risks. As I said, it wasn't worth being rejected. I'll just pretend and just move on. So
interesting you say that. I mean, for me, it was almost a little bit of the opposite of what you're describing, because although I tell people I'm not this like raging extrovert, but I am extrovert. My thing was, I was going out on dates with guys or building friendships with guys, and it was like I was conducting a business meeting. Like, I don't think I was always trying to be like on their level and basically I was just acting like a guy. And I'm like, guys don't want to date guys, most of them, you know? So I'm just like, what in this script has to change? And it was actually a couple friends that had just, you know, I was getting comments about, you know, wow, you're euphemisms, you know, you're really quote confident, or you're very, you know, forward, or you're, and I'm like, I don't know that I want to be that, you know? And so it kind of, I really had to tone it down. And what did it look like for me to act, again, not who I was, but to act in a feminine way that encouraged guys, that actually like let them join the conversation instead of me just owning the whole thing, you know, and not trying to just spar with them or whatever. So that was a big learning, a big learning curve for me, I think, to realize, Lisa, how are you presenting yourself? Because I thought it was like quirky and fun, and I think it was just domineering and crazy. So that was a good learning spot for me. Okay, in our last just like 1 minute here, I want you guys to talk about the process of change. What would be your big encouragement to young adults who are saying, maybe I do need to shake things up, maybe I need to look at, you know, do some self-reflection, maybe make some changes? What would you say are some great ways for them to go about that?
I would say have the humility to reach out to even, you know, I'm a big fan of professional counseling, as long as it's, you know, really biblically grounded. I think there's a reason those people get, you know, the a training that they do, so they can see things that even your, you know, your closest friends, those are very helpful if they have the courage to be honest. Your family is also another, you know, people that can really see into your life. But there's something about a third party who doesn't know you and isn't familiar with your story that can see with fresh eyes. And so I think that's something that I've tried to make a part of my life, especially this last year. And just, I think, you know, being in a relationship brings out things that you didn't know you had to work on, and you think you're doing pretty good. And then all of a sudden you go, oh my gosh, you know, I don't want to take this into marriage, so we need to work on this now.
Yeah.
And it's really motivating. So yeah, I would say have the humility to step forward and ask for
help. I'm by myself, I am the most amazing person in the world. I am hilarious. I'm smart. I'm attractive. I mean, it's just other people that kind of mess it up for me. So what's up with that?
I would agree, especially from a guy's perspective, is to have that accountability partner, have someone that you can, whether it's an older married man that you can talk to. Even I have some really great friends that are married that are even younger than I am, but just that you can process through things that you can identify, number one, in yourself, that you can just see that you need to work on, but also those people that can kind of just be honest with you to say, hey, this is a history, these are things that I'm dealing with, do you see anything that I don't, that I'm blind to? And just to really not try to do it by yourself.
Yeah. Great insight, you guys. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
For sharing that.
All of creation, all of the earth, make straight a highway, a path for the Lord. Jesus is coming soon. Call back the sinner, wake up the saint. Let every nation shout of your fame. Jesus is coming.
Welcome to the Culture segment on The Boundless Show. I am not Lisa Anderson. I'm Joshua Rogers, and I write for boundless.org. Lisa, I am interviewing you today because this week, your book, The Dating Manifesto, comes out through David C. Cook Publishers. How do you feel right now?
Oh, it's totally weird. You know, it's funny because you write this book, and you feel like you hand it off to the publisher, and then you're like, oh yeah, this is just done. But then you go through months of edits and all this marketing stuff they had me do and stuff. And so to actually see it in print and know that it's actually going into bookstores and people's hands is totally crazy.
Can I be honest with you about the book? I have read it.
You have, yeah. You told me you did.
I should tell you that, quite frankly, I love it.
Aww.
One of the reasons, and I'll tell you why I love it.
Okay.
I am not one who passes out compliments in a flattering way. I'm telling you the truth. I love it.
I know that because prior to recording, you just told me that I'm not afraid to post unflattering photos on Facebook, and I'm still reeling from that comment. I'm just going to be honest, but continue.
Okay. Well, maybe this will make up for it. Okay. I love your book, and the reason why I love your book is because I don't have many things that I've read on public transportation that made me laugh so loud that I embarrassed myself on the DC Metro. So, speaking of your humor, there's a lot of no-nonsense, solid wisdom in it, but there are also some funny parts that go back to like your own mishaps in dating.
Mm-hmm.
And I am curious if there's a part of you that's afraid of looking a little overexposed to potential suitors out there.
Yeah. And I think the benefit of writing this is that I put that all on paper and then had that thought after the fact. So I think readers will benefit from that era in my life in writing this book that I felt like putting it all on paper, putting it out there. And now I'm like, you know, it's funny you say that though, Joshua, because one thing that I actually have thought of since the book was really put out of my hands is this going to put me on some weird like singleness poster child list? Because I just felt like, you know, you say all these things about yourself and you share your own failures, and all of a sudden people are like, oh, okay, now we know why you're single. Now we really understand, because you can't do this. Well, you don't know what you're talking about, or you're just crazy. So, yeah, I mean, there was just a lot. But I thought to myself as well, I was like, you know what? If anything, I want to encourage the people who are reading this, who feel like they've done it all, who feel like God has left them or abandoned them, who feel like there is no way they can, you know, make it to marriage or date well or anything, and just say, you know what? I'm a few steps ahead of you. I've done this. I've messed up. I've had my, you know, long desert seasons as well. And so I'm kind of right here with my arm around your shoulder.
Now, Lisa, you say that you talk about your own failures, but you actually talk about some other people's failures. I noticed
I do. That
you
are, opportunity.
Yes, mm-hmm. I noticed you were not afraid to discuss quite liberally some of the interesting fellows you've been out on dates yet, like PowerPoint Guy.
Yeah, very true.
You want to tell the audience a little bit about PowerPoint Guy?
Sure. PowerPoint Guy is a guy that I dated for a season, and, you know, technically a legit guy. You know, it's not like when I talk about these people that I've dated, it's not like I was just out, you know, in clubs and bars picking up guys. I mean, these are guys that you would look, they don't have L's on their foreheads, you know, walking around. But this guy was super, the thing about him is he was very Boundless, we talk about intentionality a lot. This guy was intentional with a capital I.
Oh, yeah.
He was all over it. He was, you know, had a lot going on in the business world, just seemed like he had his stuff together, all that kind of stuff. So we went out. I can't even remember what we did on our first date, but on our second date, at some point, he pulled out a laptop and had created an entire PowerPoint presentation, actually with Excel spreadsheets that had timelines on them as to where our relationship was going to go and on what timetable. And that freaked me out a little bit.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder how freaked out he's going to be when he sees that he's made it into your book.
Yeah. Well, actually, there were a couple other stories that I could have put in the book about him, but I felt like they were so unique that it would have really ID'd him, and I feared getting sued. And so I probably would have had to come to you for some counsel over that. So I chose selectively to leave a few things out.
Lisa mentions getting sued and me because I actually am a lawyer. Yeah. Thankfully, I don't do well. The fact is, the ultimate defense to a charge of libel is that it's true.
Oh, okay.
So apparently, this actually happened, and including some of the other stories. What do you think these guys might think when they actually read the book? Are you worried that they might email you?
You know, there are a couple that I'm kind of worried about. You know, I mean, but I don't know. Again, I keep telling myself, not only was this their story, but it was my story too. I was part of it. And so I feel like I have some license to share in that. And really, I look and say, I'm not trying to be on any kind of high horse or any kind of pedestal, because I share plenty of my own missteps. And so it's kind of something where I feel a little awkward about it, but at the same time, just saying, you know, hopefully these guys will take it in good faith. Most of these relationships ended on a pretty good note for the most part. Not all of the online ones did. I kind of detail some of those. But, you know, I'm hopeful for it. What I've actually told a lot of my friends, both female and male, is if you see your name in the book, I'm telling a good story about you. If you don't see a name, just look for, you know, if you recognize yourself, it's probably you.
Right. Speaking of online, you know, when I got married not that long ago, 7 years ago. And back then, online dating was kind of on the fringe. Mm-hmm. And I tried it for a month. Oh my gosh, there I go. I said it. And people would say, well, how did you meet the girl? Mutual friend? You know, but these days, there's no mutual friend. It's like, yeah, we met on OkCupid. Oh, we met on, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, these days, there's just a really forward approach to online dating. Mm-hmm. Are you dating online?
I am not currently, largely because I have done a couple seasons of it, and I feel like I'm still recovering from those seasons.
Tell me what recovery looks like, and why do you need to recover from online dating?
Well, okay, actually, there's two things to this. One is that many of the online dating sites are owned by, let's say, like for lack of a better term, I'll just say many of the sites are no longer owned by Christian entities at all. So in fact, some of them have been bought out by the porn industry. So there's a Christian dating site that is owned by Penthouse, for example. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. So many of them I've called out publicly on the show or elsewhere. And so just personally, out of principle, I feel like I can't support them. Some of the other ones.
Like which one? Go ahead and call it out.
Well, if anyone's on Big Church, last time I knew it was owned by Penthouse. So,
wow.
And there are just a few others that have gone public and as a result have kind of sold out and just the way that they do business and stuff. So, so that's one, you know, that's one thing. The other is just that when I did this, the first time I did it, I was probably on about six sites simultaneously. And that basically constitutes a full-time job. So, I mean, when you're in contact, all of a sudden you start conversations with different guys. I would be IMing them. I would be going back and forth in different forms of communication. So I'd get home from work and I'm trying to keep, you know, juggle all of these conversations, and that became problematic. And so not only that, but then you filter out, you find out that, you know, let's say roughly conservatively 50% of the guys you talk to who are self-described evangelical Christians are not, then I started witnessing to them. So I was just flat out like, I'm going to use at least this time for something good. And so I'm like, look, here's the deal. So that became exhausting. So that went on for like a year and a half, 2 years. And I finally had to say, I need to take a break. And yeah.
So you write some really great advice in the book about dealing with the whole online dating thing. So what do you say to a young woman? She's, you know, in her late 20s. She started an online date. Not a lot of guys in her church are showing interest. What do you say to her when she says, look, I don't want to get burnt out on this, but I do want to give it a chance? Mm-hmm. What do you say?
Yeah. And I think, first of all, like, so I'll speak specifically to women. We have to check our motives and why we're going online. Some women go online just because, and, you know, I feel for them because I kind of felt this way too, because nothing is happening in their lives. Okay. So they feel like it's at least a way for them to put themselves out there and kind of do something. But they're also doing it a little bit for just affirmation. They want to get their profile checked out. They want to have a guy contact them, and then they'll get into conversation and build up all this like connection and stuff that really isn't going to go anywhere. So I would tell that woman, for example, first of all, make sure you have your game plan from the get-go. Pick a time frame that you're going to do this, pick a site or two, and then get a team around you who knows what you're going to do and the space that you're going to do it in and is constantly monitoring what you're doing online. Because I know, you know, I know people, and I got caught in this trap a little bit too, who get way too deep too soon. I mean, I was sharing way too much information about myself with guys I knew nothing about, getting into whether it was debates or just emotional intimacy that was way inappropriate. And it just, it happens. It's like a slippery slope. It's super weird. And you feel like this confidence in doing it because you're not face to face, but it's still really inappropriate for the level of how you know the person. So you have to build up good hedges around yourself in light of that. And then really make sure that you know why you're doing this and when you're going to end doing it, to what purpose.
And, you know, the book, I can say, again, I like it. I thought it was applicable. It actually was helpful for me in giving advice to some of, you know, my single friends mm-hmm. that I talk to. I think that there are probably some guys will look at it. They see Lisa Anderson, they, you know, and they think maybe this is a book that's for women. This is for my sister. This is for the ladies in my church. Why is this a book that's for men and not just women? Is this the Christian version of he's just not that into you, or is it something bigger than that?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's kind of a few books in one. It really for me is because even in deciding to do the book, I had to figure out if this was a book that needed to be written. Because I've read a ton of books on singleness. I've read a ton of books on dating. So for me, this was, what is it that I have to say that is different than what's out there? And I think there are a couple things. First off, I am writing this as a single person who is not yet married. I think a lot of dating books that you see or books on singleness are people who are married who want to tell you about that season in their life and then kind of say, but rah, rah, now I made it. I got my fairy tale ending. So let me just tell you how it worked and give you a formula. And that's not very encouraging to a lot of singles. The other thing is, I told my publisher from the get-go, in fact, when I first sat down to lunch with them, I said, I am very intent on making this for both women and men. And in fact, I wrote into my contract the whole idea of the cover behind it. I said, here's what I don't want. I don't want rings, cake toppers, flowers, hearts. I don't want a woman with her arms outstretched to the sunset. I don't want, this is not a, hey, single ladies, let's all be amazing kind of book. This is really a book about everything dating and singleness and relationships that I wish I'd been told in my 20s, but wasn't. And I feel like it's almost utilizing myself as a cautionary tale to say, hey, here's what happened for me. Here's what I learned. Here's the road that I walked. You might want to consider doing things a little bit differently, and I'm going to straight up tell you why.
And so we're going to have, I mean, you have a sizable number of men in the Boundless audience, and they're going to buy the book. They're going to check it out. We've got men who came to the Pursuit Conference. They got the book. This is kind of a personal question, but is there a little part of you that's hoping that your future husband will pick the book up, read it, and go, you know what? she's got quirks, but I like her, and sort of meet you through the book.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I hope that right now he's sitting in his house in Polynesia, and he's going to come and like find me, because I really want to go there. No, I mean, I think there's always that possibility, but it's so funny because I have, you know, you always think like, oh, this might be it, this might be it, but I have been on the Focus on the Family daily broadcast. I speak all over the place. I host an international show for singles, for crying out loud, and so far it hasn't happened. So I am ultimately trusting God for how my story ends. It's funny, when I show up on the Focus on the Family daily broadcast, I get a lot of mail from prisoners, and I get a lot of mail from guys who are like over maybe 70 or 75. So I haven't held out a lot of hope. Maybe the book will be different. We'll see how it goes. Not ashamed to say it. Not ashamed, you know, and if God uses it, awesome.
Okay, well, let's talk about those guys a little bit. Okay. Let's say that I'm a 33-year-old single man. You know I'm not. I'm married. But I'm doing the online dating thing, but I don't go on a lot of dates because I'm only interested in Barbie dolls. And interestingly enough, the Barbie dolls don't usually respond to me on the dating sites. Mm-hmm. What have you got to say to me?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is that the Barbie dolls on the dating sites probably aren't real people. So I know a lot of women that totally put up fake photos. So guys need to realize that women can be just as fake as men can and play up something and be players and whatever. So be aware of that. But I would also say, and this is something I talk, you know, you mentioned the book being for men. I am an equal opportunity offender in this book. I go after women. I go after men. I go after all of us en masse. Okay. So for the guys, I actually have a portion of the book where I talk about what I call the guys who are looking for a supermodel who writes Bible studies. And it's this kind of unattainable ideal of Christian guys who know that they're attracted to hotness, which is totally legit, guys. We're all, you know, I support you. But they want this, like, you know, kind of airbrushed version of someone they've maybe seen in church or whatever. But then they know that that's not going to hold a marriage together. So she also has to be, you know, spiritually mature. And if she can preferably, you know, lead or write Bible studies, that is super. If she drinks fair trade coffee, that's even better. And so it just all of a sudden little requirements are added to her resume, and that woman does not exist. And so the guy just sits around waiting for her to show up, and she never will.
So what if you're talking to the 33-year-old single female? She hasn't been asked out on a date in 18 months. She's starting to feel hopeless and insecure about getting married, much less having kids. Mm-hmm. What do you say to her?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of twofold in that situation, because I think women can be frustrated easily because, and this is why I alluded to this in talking about online dating, we feel like our hands are tied. If we truly want to let guys lead and step up, and if we want to be the responders, which I think is a biblical notion in most contexts, then we can feel powerless. It's very easy to just be like, what do I do? So I want to give those women an equal measure of encouragement, but also give them a few things in their hearts to check as well. And one is, are you truly open to any guy, you know, that is asking you out, provided he is at the very base level qualified? He is a believer, he's growing in his faith, and I outline kind of those non-negotiables in the book as well. So I think a lot of women will say, you know, well, no guys are asking me out, when really what they mean is no guys that I'm really interested in or that I have in my head, you know, as being the guy I'd want to date are asking me out. The other thing is, I often tell women, you know, it's kind of that idea of like, if you do the same thing over and over again and expect something to be different, no, it's not going to happen. That is insanity. Are you really just, you know, grabbing your takeout after work every night and going home and watching rom-coms or hanging out with your girls? You know, my sister kind of called me on this last year because it was Valentine's Day and a bunch of my girlfriends got together and we watched a movie and did dinner and whatever. And she's like, is this another Galentine's? So, like, literally, why are you always, you're always in women's Bible studies. You always hang out with girlfriends. You hike with girlfriends. You camp with girlfriends. Are you meeting any guys? And I'm like, I don't know. So had to be called on my own bluff.
Well, you know, and there comes a point where, you know, we can do as much encouragement as we want, but there comes a point where, as you mentioned in your book, there's a place for grieving because mm-hmm. sometimes things aren't happening. Mm-hmm. Women hit 40 and there doesn't appear to be a prospect. We see so many of our readers at Boundless saying, look, I've done it all. I've tried. You mm-hmm. know, I think I've done everything I ought to do. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, not only did you make me laugh out loud on public transportation, you got me choked up on public transportation, aww, too. And I think that this paragraph is what got me, I think, particularly as a dad of little girls who could grow up and maybe not have a man who comes to be their husband. Mm-hmm. You said, "My dad won't be at my wedding. He died when I was 30. So the dream of having him vet potential boyfriends, give his blessing on my eventual spouse, and then walk me down the aisle is a dream that will never come to fruition. My mom is 86 years old. Will she be at my wedding? Will there be a wedding? Only God knows." Mm-hmm. That's intense. Mm-hmm. How hard was it for you to write that and know that the whole world was going to hear your heartbreak on in a book?
Yeah. Well, that okay, first of all, that entire chapter, I think I cried typing that entire chapter. I mean, I think it really was a very emotional one for me. It's something, in fact, when I have talked about my fears of getting older, my fears of being alone, my fears of not having no one who for whom I'm that most important person, I have not yet talked about that in public and not broken down and cried. So it's still a very real thing to me. And it was a hard thing to write as well, because not only does it reflect my eventual, you know, hopeful or whatever wedding, but it also just reflects my life in general. I mean, the fact that I don't have a lot of people who have walked through every season of life with me. And so many people desire marriage because they want that person to create memories with. They want that person to grow old with and to have, you know, those shared experiences. And I don't have that. I just have people in pieces throughout my life and stuff. And so it's hard because when you start talking about desiring that, people, you know, kind of give you that pat on the head and like, oh, it'll happen for you, or don't worry, or just, you know, make sure that you're just staying close with the Lord. And so they're all kind of like empty. They can seem like empty sentiments. And so it is a very, I don't even know how long ago it was. It was only in recent years where I really started having the courage to think about this. Because I think in my 20s, I just thought I had my whole life ahead of me. I was just like, of course I'm going to get married. And in my 30s, I was like very actively trying to make it happen. So I was a little bit frantic. And so I was so caught up in that. And so now I've come to a place where I've really had to recognize, okay, Lisa, you have water under the bridge. There are total losses that you've experienced. There are things that literally will not happen for you. That is a reality. And so reconciling that has been a difficult thing, while at the same time trying to hold on to hope that in the midst of all this and reconciling myself to the things I will not have, God still has to be scripting something good for me, because He is God and He is good.
I think you're right about that. And I'm curious. I was wondering whether I should ask this question, but I do want to ask you this. I think it's agitating to singles when they hear, you know, cutesy phrases like, well, Jesus was single and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But one thing we do know for sure is that you will not be single in heaven. Mm-hmm. We do know that there is a marriage that's coming. There will be a wedding. Mm-hmm. You will walk down that aisle. Mm-hmm. What do you see on Jesus's face when you envision that? That thing that you haven't quite gotten here, what do you see when mm-hmm. you see yourself at that wedding?
Yeah, it's weird. And I don't know that I've thought about it a ton. I mean, I think what comes to mind first is, you know, and I, first of all, is the flip of that. And I actually reference this when I talk about the sovereignty of God in the book, that I tell people, you know, at least there's a consolation, because death is the great leveler. I mean, people will not be married or given in marriage. And so surely, because we know that marriage is such a good thing, what we will have as the bridegroom of Christ is even better than that picture. And even better, you know, and I haven't, not having been married, I have not, you know, had any of the difficult portions of marriage, nor have I had any of the great portions. So I can just look at it objectively and be like, oh, it's such a great thing. So, but I think when I just think of how, you know, I'm just reminded of, you know, I think it was John Eldridge who said something about when we get to heaven, God isn't, He's going to make all things new. He's not going to make all new things. And to think of like relationship restored and feeling like God is going to backfill all the losses and all the unmet expectations and all the unmet hopes and stuff. And it's all going to be good. And I can't even wrap my head around what that's going to look like. But I know that I'm going to be in perfect relationship forever with someone that will never leave me, and with a body of believers that will just be there. There will be no loss. There will be no catfighting or no love triangles or just weirdness about that. So I think that's a hugely comforting and exciting thing.
You're right. Well, Lisa, thank you so much. The book's amazing. And I know it's going to do incredibly well. And thanks for talking with us.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, Josh. Oh, Jesus, I are finishing out the show with our inbox, as we always do, and I get to invite Glenn Lutyens back. Hey, Glenn.
Lisa, good to be with you.
Great to have our counselors here to answer your questions, and this week is no exception. So, Glenn, you ready for it?
I am.
Here we go. Our listener says, I'm in love with a woman, and she's in love with me, and we both wish to marry when the time is right. On two occasions, we touched more than we should have. We both recognize we were in sin, and we need help refraining from the urges and natural desires that accompany male and female attraction. Any ideas on how we can stay pure?
Well, let me just mention that I appreciate the fact that the individual is acknowledging it for what it is. Mm-hmm. That there, God, the way God has designed us, there's a draw, there's an attraction, there's an appeal, but really the importance of just really being honest with God and acknowledging when we've stepped across some lines that we know are there. I would say just the importance of confessing it to the Lord and also talking about it together. If it's a scenario where two people went farther than they feel is right, to be honest with each other, to apologize to each other, and then to discuss their boundaries, to discuss what they'll be, and put them in writing. I think even discussing them, it's good, but putting them in writing, I think, takes it that one step further of, you know, maybe looking at when do we spend time together, where are we, do we put ourselves in a situation where we become more tempted. I think of the passage in Scripture that says, how can you carry fire in your bosom and not get burned? Mm. When you're, if you create some of those healthy boundaries, you're going to be less likely to fall into temptation. Mm. And I think it can be really helpful for a couple to have maybe a mentor couple, or at least an accountability person, somebody who can ask them not to beat them over the head. The Lord does desire to forgive and to renew and to restore, but for there to be some accountability, somebody that a person can have talk with them, ask them how things are going, some specific questions, and to do that on a regular basis. A lot of times with accountability, it's real easy to kind of have that initial agreement, but then there's not the follow through. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be somebody who's willing to really carry through and ask those questions.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think so helpful for, you know, a lot of times, like you alluded to, a couple will be like, oh, okay, well, we just got to throw in the towel because right. we already messed up. And yeah. so there's no hope or whatever. But you're saying that really there are great steps that they can take.
There's steps that can be taken. A lot of times people learn, okay, we thought we could have the power over this, but we need some boundaries. I do think a resource that could be very valuable for people is Henry Cloud and John Townsend's book, Boundaries and Dating. Hmm. It talks, there's a chapter in there that talks about setting boundaries and the importance of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And how would you say, like, for those who, you know, maybe have friends who are in a dating relationship that they're concerned about, maybe their boundaries or just concerned about kind of the tack they're taking, is there a helpful and encouraging way of approaching it with a friend of yours where you maybe need to confront?
Well, I remember Norm Wright, one of the questions he asks in premarital counseling is, what is the extent of the affection that you've shown? And then his next question is the same no matter what. He says, how do you feel about that? And so it's kind of a way maybe to bring it up. I mean, that's pretty direct, mm-hmm. You know, but to, you know, maybe see if, you know, are there some parameters? Are you safeguarding your relationship for marriage? And it takes courage to do that, but that's what God has put his spirit in us for.
Well, great thoughts. Thank you so much, Glenn.
You're very welcome.
Okay, folks, that is it for this week's show. Do find us with your comments over at editor@boundless.org. You can submit a question for a future show or comment straight up on this show at our blog over at boundless.org. And we hope that you're also sharing the show with your friends and finding us on social media as well. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.